This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you very much for that introduction, and thank you all for coming today. We have some things in common, I suspect. All of us in this room are in some sort of leadership position, and sometimes leadership is very much public, and sometimes it's not so. One of the times that it's public is when we're up speaking somewhere, and sometimes when we're in the boardroom, it's really pretty private. So we recognize that there are these different roles. Today I want to think about with you about the board's role in finances and fundraising. The board's role is bigger than that, but so let's just look at that as we think together about the board's role in governance. When we think about governance, we notice, I'm just checking to see if I'm with you there. So the board exercises spiritual discernment to discover God's will for the organization. I put spiritual discernment at the top of the list because we recognize that we're spiritual beings. And then the board's role is to establish mission, vision, and values. And, of course, that's something that a board will work with administration on as well. The board hires, supports, and evaluates the administrator. So that's a big subject in itself and a crucial relationship. The board sets policies and oversees programs. And the board secures finances and protects assets. So that's the part that we're going to be looking at in more detail today. The board also ensures the legal, financial, and spiritual integrity of the ministry. So there's a stewardship angle here. So governance involves directing and guiding, but it also involves stewardship. And it's a stewardship both for the ones that and the programs that are being supervised, but it's also a stewardship that is exercised towards God and towards government and the supporting constituency. And the board develops a strong board of learning members if it does its job well. And the board promotes and maintains strong ties to the supporting constituency. So today, just want to notice this basic, big, and there are different ways to say it. I've seen lists of 10. But governance is the essence of board work. And so if you and I don't really like to sit in meetings, don't really like to pay much attention to financial statements and so on, maybe we ought to be volunteering, or maybe we ought to be taking a staff role or something like that. But board work involves all of these things. With that, we'll just make some comments here. So boards authorize the planning, the strategic planning sometimes called, and ensure that the organization has the necessary money to carry out that plan. That's why we get into some fundraising thoughts. So the board also needs to see that the funds that are given to the charity are properly used. This workshop will expand on these two aspects of effective board governance, fundraising, and financial oversight. Now, we need to recognize that not all nonprofits may raise funds in the same way. There might be fees or tuitions that are charged and collected. Maybe there will be donations, and those donations may not even be raised through fundraising. But there could also be fundraisers that are a subset here of donations, and that could be something that the staff or the board or a combination of the two would be involved with. Whether or not nonprofits rely on one fundraising, the ultimate weight of financial responsibility rests on the board of directors. They are positioned to lead out in communication of needs, recruitment of funds, and delegation of the same. So it varies. I don't know how it is in your situations, whether you're already raising funds or not, or whether you're excited about it, or whether you're hesitant about it. Let's talk some more. As we go, I do want to invite you to raise your hand. It's especially nice when it's a smaller group like this to be able to pick up on things that come to your mind. So I don't mind if you get my attention or speak up as we go. But certainly at the end, I hope that we have maybe 10 minutes or more in which we can just interact on the things that the questions and the comments that come. So fundraising. While fundraising is a significant responsibility of nonprofit board members, many members struggle to fulfill their responsibilities. And so I'm going to highlight six hindrances here to fundraising. Fundraising expectations are not clearly presented during recruitment of a board member. So that's something that may catch somebody by surprise. Oh, you mean me? You're going to ask me to go talk to my neighbor or my friend or my family? Secondly, members are hesitant to ask monetary favors of friends. We just aren't sure whether they'll take it well from us, so we hesitate sometimes. And thirdly, fundraising seems like begging. Or fourthly, sometimes the board doesn't sufficiently represent the whole supporting constituency. So if there's quite a range of supporters out there that could be tapped into, and the board is especially trying to reach these areas, we may not reach around well enough. Fifthly, some people are not gifted to ask for funds, and we have to recognize a variation in giftings. Sixth, some people do not recognize the advantages of board membership. So I want to talk some more about these points by point, to see if we can overcome the hindrances we may be facing here. So introducing expectations. So point number one, let's learn to present clear fundraising expectations during recruitment and orientation. And I don't know how it is for you in your board's service, if you are a board member, but probably your chairman gets the chance to go ask somebody to serve on the board. And it's something that I had to learn how to do as well. And I realized that it was easy. It was tempting to just say, well, we just have two meetings a year, or we just have one meeting a month, or whatever the regular meetings are. And then kind of forget that, you know, the time will come when we're going to ask for this or that. And so some of these things like this ought to be part of the package of recruitment so that we're fair. What we want is a contributing board member in the end. It's not that his name has to be John Yoder, but that it's somebody that fits, that's going to be able to make the time to make this work. And so this would be one of the things that would be good for a board chairman or any board member to keep in mind. So clarifying expectations when recruiting is not only courteous, but it's the right thing to do. First, the board member should know what he's expected to do, like freely give to the ministry. I believe that any board member ought to be giving to the organization at a meaningful level for his income level, his situation. So everybody has to determine that for himself. But that should be said. And then the fact that board members can also be asked to go out and talk to their friends and family and acquaintances to ask them for their support. So We're talking here about a board. We recognize that board members give of their time, but we're not just talking about that. We're talking about contributing financially. And an attitude of I give my time and others can give money really isn't adequate for board members. But secondly, a board member, the prospective board member, should be told when asked to serve on the board that board members will be asked to assist with fundraising. And making sure that members understand these expectations sets the stage for teamwork. Now, let me also be clear that administration and staff can also do fundraising. And some of this can be delegated to them. And if the board is just really quite sure that this is where it ought to be, the board could make that decision because it is a board of governors that we're talking about here. And yet, when we think about the responsibilities that a board has to secure the funding for the organization or to see to it that things are provided for, then it does make sense that we come at it with an openness to do our part, whatever that can be determined to be. Is there any question? I hope I'm clear, and I hope that you also dare to ask or comment if you have anything to say. But we'll continue, unless there's that immediately. And then I will just expect that there probably will be some clarifications and perhaps even modifications. So now we want to think about the second hindrance and see if we can overcome that one. Consider learning to ask monetary favors of friends. Probably most of us would admit to hesitating to ask monetary favors of our friends. But I think most of us that have tried it would say that it really hasn't hurt our relationship. You know, we can do it in such a way that invites them to participate and that isn't forcing them, but to respectfully give them the opportunity. Matter of fact, some of our friends have asked us to support their causes, right? So why shouldn't we ask them to support ours? And does it not stand to reason that if we've already given to the cause ourselves, the next place to go is to our closest friends and relatives? Finally, beyond close friends and relatives, we can go to acquaintances then. So as this fundraising effort gains steam, and we've put some seed money in, our friends and family have put in some more, and maybe we're now a third of the way or halfway to the goal. Now maybe spreading the net a little further to other acquaintances is going to be more fruitful because they see the end goal a little closer in sight. Learn to ask monetary favors of friends. And then fundraising seems like begging. Well, are we beggars? Are we? Well, Andy Robinson tells of a man who came to a session, I think, like this. He said, "Teach me to be a better beggar." Well, what does a beggar suggest to you? Let's picture sitting, what, on the sidewalk somewhere with her hat in place or her hands open and beseechingly looking at passersby and hoping to get something for nothing? Is that what we're doing when we're promoting for our nonprofits? No, let's change the picture. Instead of considering ourselves beggars, let's consider ourselves as those that stand up and communicate for the vision that we have and how people can participate in God's work through this organization. In this way, we're enabling a critical service to the community. Now we're offering an exchange. We're not asking something for nothing. We're giving them a chance to participate in God's work in the community and in the world. Isn't that something? They get to participate with us. We're building a picture of the good that can happen. Edgar Stays, who has written a number of books on board topics, but he wrote the book you may have heard about, Doing Good Better. Earlier editions were Doing Good Even Better, and let me explain what he means by doing good. Aren't nonprofits in the business of doing good, of providing services to the community and to the nation and to the, well, to the world? So that's what he's talking about, that nonprofits do that. And he's saying that if we think about these things that nonprofits can do, and especially if boards become engaged with this topic, that we can do it even better. And he said, fundraising is made easier and more effective when it is understood not as begging, but as relationship building, as inviting persons of compassion to participate in an activity that will better someone's life and in turn bless the giver, unquote. Additionally, considering ourselves beggars reveals a focus on ourselves. Sometimes we get caught with that, don't we? We so often operate on that kind, with that kind of a, oh, how does it affect me and how do I feel thing. So really, it's better to focus on the donor and the ministry. We can ask God to help us to focus instead on representing his work to a potential donor in a way that sincerely invites him to consider the opportunity. And then we have to leave the decision to the donor. After all, it's a fundraiser's job to ask. It's the donor's job to decide. So I hope that we can take courage when we have these kinds of opportunities, that we look at it that way, that we're building relationships and that we're helping people do something that's for the good of others. Fourthly, maybe the board doesn't sufficiently represent the supporting constituency, the whole supporting constituency. In this case, the board may want to recruit members from the areas not represented, either on the next opening of the board, or perhaps the number of board members could be expanded to better serve the whole constituency. And another bridge that can be used by our nonprofits is to form an advisory council or expand the advisory council, because advisors coming from different constituent groups and geographical locations continues to build the channel of communications going both directions, from constituents to nonprofit and from nonprofit to constituents. And so they supplement the board's skills and abilities in reach and give counsel to guide the organization towards its mission. And in the context of fundraising, it broadens the reach to constituent financial support. Fifthly, recognizing that there are varied giftings, we admit that board members have them, so those who are very shy about asking should participate in other ways. They can introduce their friends to fundraisers. They can accompany other members to do the asking and thank contributors for their vital contributions. They can also do other voluntary projects. They can serve guests at promotional meetings, say, and programs. They can recruit staff and volunteers and so on. So let's use shy members in other ways. Sixthly, let's recognize and leverage the advantages of board membership. You might not have thought about this, but board members do have several advantages over staff. So in fundraising, board members are volunteers. They're not paid staff. So as a volunteer, we can feel free to ask people, knowing that they're not going to think that we're getting any financial benefit from it ourselves. So that's an advantage over paid staff. This means that board members do not have the same personal contact and potential conflict of interest. And then secondly, board members can reach into the community as peers, since they are also community members. Additionally, the collective reach of the full board broadens the base of contact beyond that of the staff. So we have opportunities here. And knowing these advantages, I think, should help all board members to confidently leverage the advantages for vital funding of the ministry. So, a number of things there to consider. Additionally, just like to mention a few more things before leaving the subject of fundraising. And I'll pause after this slide to just again ask if there are any questions. It should be mentioned that board member fundraising is not a year-round responsibility. It's often seasonal. For example, a capital improvement project or a campaign, or an annual auction to support the general fund. Admittedly, some boards do not actively engage in fundraising for good reasons. For example, some nonprofits do not rely on fundraising to do their important work. Other times, the reasons given for board member reluctance are weak excuses. Where so, let us adopt a learner's posture. Fundraising is a learned skill that develops with exercise, like so much of life. I'm sure that we didn't get up one day and decide that we're going to walk. I'm sure that you didn't learn to ride a bicycle the first day without a scrape. I'm sure that running and skating and basketball playing and all of those things that are skills didn't develop in the first day or week. It's a skill that we can develop with exercise. And for all of us, I think we know that once we believe in something, it isn't hard to talk about it with some conviction. And when we can do that, when we believe in the mission of the organization, we're going to be believable and we can overcome some of these hesitations that are common to man. Board member fundraising accomplishes more than just providing financial stability for the organization. It also keeps the nonprofit from becoming too dependent upon others' funding sources, such as governments or foundations, which may have unscriptural strings attached. Board member fundraising helps keep the organization independent from the government, say, while at the same time connected and accountable to its constituent base in a way that no other funding method can. And that's pretty powerful to think about, the connection that there is maintained through this channel and others to the constituent base. Jesus taught his first disciples, "You have not because you ask not." Remember? Do you think that truth is still valid today? Well, I think most certainly. When Millard Fuller, a highly successful fundraiser for Habitat for Humanity, was told that Habitat asks too often, he replied, "We've tried it both ways. We get more when we ask." Unquote. So let those who govern our nonprofit organizations take scriptural courage and the lesson of Habitat for Humanity, and dare to ask God's people to fund his work. Well, I'll pause here before I switch to other parts of financial oversight to just entertain any questions you have so far. Yes?
So, how do you reconcile that quote with George Mueller's life? Maybe just to push back a little bit, "You have not because you ask not." Was that taken out of context there? Or?
So are you suggesting that maybe Jesus really meant ask the Father rather than ask your neighbor?
Because if you keep going and you ask and receive not, because you ask amiss, that you may consume it upon your lusts. So
yeah. We're actually switching scriptures, but it's scripture. That's James writing what you just quoted. But continue.
No, and I, that's something I wrestle with. I know there's some organizations that are very strong on trusting and relying on the God to know. Your Heavenly Father knows your needs even before you ask. So how do you resolve that tension between the one ideology and the other ideology?
Well,
are they both right?
I'm certainly hesitant to step on another man's approach and conviction. So I want to respect that thought. I've been on another track here. Let me put it this way. Some of you may have shared this experience, but I have gotten used to asking for people's signing on the dotted line when I'm selling something. And so I think that experience of discovering that helping them get what they want, listening to their needs, and then helping design the package for them, there's a certain joy that comes in that. And then just saying, well, if that's what we want to do, would you like to sign right here? At first you hate to ask because you're afraid of being... I used to be afraid of being turned down. But now... I get used to it, and I say, well, would you like to get on the list today, or are you wanting a little more time to think about it? You know, there's ways, and maybe I should even say it the other way. Do you want more time to think about it, or would you like to get on the list today? And so, you know, there are ways to do it and to become comfortable. And so... Tell me, what do you think?
And you know where I come from. I'm from CAM, Christian Aid Ministries, so we definitely ask.
You do.
But I do keep those two different
intentions.
Intention. Where's the right spot?
Sure. Yes, sir.
If I may make one quick observation, that even those people who don't ask people, they ask God, mm-hmm. and yet they communicate.
Yeah.
And if you don't communicate, in the end, it's God's people that do the helping.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you because I'm a new board member. A lot of this is just really helping me to kind of see what the expectations are for, so even,
That's
I
right.
really appreciate it.
Well, praise God. Let's keep building here, because there is a time when we have to just drop it if we don't get done. But thank you very much for that so far. So Jesus said, you have not because you ask not. And let's dig a little further on what the context is there. I don't have any more to say about that. Part 2, fundraising and finances. Now we're thinking about finances. So not only does a responsible board oversee the ingathering of financial resources, but also oversees their management and disbursement. A nonprofit board must keep... Let me just admit that there are other aspects, but sometimes the other aspects almost say, I don't care about those financial statements. That's just not of interest to me. And I would say to that kind of a person, you might be a good candidate for the advisory council, but I don't think you've got a complete enough vision for the being on the board, because the board has a responsibility overall to secure the financial health of the organization. So a nonprofit board must keep or delegate the keeping of current, complete, and accurate financial records and ensure that strong financial controls are in place and consistently followed. Rather, regular financial reports and dashboards with key numbers, ratios, and charts can provide insightful visual representation and help a board stay abreast of big picture trends. So I'm especially interested in big picture trends here. And so we don't need to all become accountants or equally in depth, but a board needs to care about what's reported and care that this isn't just ignored. Clear communication and understanding of ministry finances is vitally important in avoiding financial problems and helping the ministry be a positive witness for Christ. I guess I'm almost repeating, but here's some more of that. It's easy for board members to focus on spiritual priorities at the expense of reviewing the organization's financial activities, but too little attention to financial matters invites a financial train wreck. The responsibility for an organization's derailment is often shared between the administration and board, but the finger of blame finally ends up back here to the board. So how can a board avoid financial pitfalls? Well, first of all, I suggest begin by recruiting board members that have some high competence in understanding financial reports and accounting. And then let's adopt the following 7 habits, and you're finding those coming up in your notes here. And I am inspired by the list that Busby and Pearson came up with. I've modified it a little, but largely they get credit. Build a strong stewardship culture, keep borrowing under control, adopt reasonable operating budgets, develop adequate cash reserves, honor all donor intentions, and operate with appropriate financial transparency, and engage the annual services of an independent auditor. And I would like to expand those 7. There are the 7. These are suggestions, areas for us to pay attention to. I've just read them. The first one is build a stewardship culture. A governing board establishes the mood or the mindset of the ministry. Its leadership is key in developing a healthy stewardship culture that fosters financial integrity and accountability. A wise board and administrator focus on the balance sheet where the assets and liabilities are summarized. Balance sheet. Sometimes people go too quickly to the bottom line on the profit loss or the income statement. So a wise board and administrator pay attention on the balance sheet where the summaries are. This leads to sound targets based on liquidity of cash. Here's a helpful guideline. Liabilities should not exceed 2.5 times unrestricted assets. Liabilities should be kept in their place. Any organization blessed with leadership focused on the balance sheet invariably operates with healthy cash flows. Prompt payments of bills is one sign of a healthy cash flow. If the money is on hand, don't wait to pay. A financially strong ministry pays its accounts payable within 15 days. Furthermore, the mood of financial integrity modeled by the board is contagious, and a healthy stewardship culture characterizes the entire ministry. I don't know for sure how many mission boards are represented here today, but it's very possible that the stateside accounting office and so on almost seems like a chain around the neck of somebody out there doing good, meeting needs and ministering and doesn't really understand sometimes the financial statements and all. So I realize that that's why I think it's significant when the board picks up on this and helps develop a culture that's of the same mind, more nearly the same mind. But if it's only the accountant over there and that office that's, saying, oops, things aren't quite comfortable here, then maybe it's going to squeak and strain the organization a little more. So build a strong stewardship culture. And then secondly, minimize borrowing. Excess debt contributes significantly to financial difficulty and failure. Other factors such as significant change in key personnel or sudden decline in contributions can also play a role. But if an organization fails financially, there is typically more debt than can be reasonably repaid by the ministry. I remember when I first joined the Faith Builders Board that we had $350,000 in debt that was done to renovate a certain wing of the building, and maybe that was a good step of faith. But I'm here to testify that once the building is all done, it's harder to raise the funds for the repayment of the debt. And finally, we got a hold of some of these things that I'm going to be mentioning here, and we started to budget to pay it down year by year. And there was a collective sigh of relief / praise the Lord for deliverance from this yoke when after about 5 or 6 years we reached that goal. And then we began to set the sights to build up some funds for the downturns. And so here you see some of these ideas. Maybe some of it comes later, but some questions that we should be regularly asking. What is the current balance of the organization's mortgage? And debt generally should not exceed 2/3 of the market value of the property. Are debt payments being made on time without straining operations? As a rule, annual debt payments should not exceed 20% of the organization's annual cash operating expenses. And how can we develop a cash flow that can eliminate all debt? And is debt reduction included in the annual budget? So, these are questions, suggestions for you to keep in mind as you serve on a board. If you've got debt, ask these kinds of questions. Work together with the board in figuring out, and see, this may lead to some fundraising activities. And again, if the board is willing to help shoulder these things, it can make a difference. And in the end, when you're done with that, then we can take some of the next step I just alluded to. Budget reasonably. Every nonprofit should have an operating budget and, when needed, a capital budget, both of which are annually approved by the board of directors. These budgets give both direction and restraint to the ministry's financial activity and support the organization's strategic plan. Reasonable estimates of revenue and expenses means that the nonprofit sets realistic and attainable projections for the coming year. Reasonable. Let's compare some to last year, maybe. And then if we've got this, we want to add a 7th and 8th grade classroom, then we've got to include that in the budget. And then we have, if that requires a certain amount of fundraising, then we include that in our budget and our capital budget and so on. Yes?
Quick question. On the revenue side, we have a heavily subsidized church school. Like, what for parameters do you use when you're looking forward for the part where you expect donations? Like, I was told, look back of 5 years average. I'm curious about your opinion on that.
I think a historic look is the first thing I do also. And but are you saying, is that adequate or inadequate or what?
I'm just curious if you have a personal opinion on how big of a range to use when you're trying to find the average of a look back on donations.
Well, yeah, I would say 3 to 5 years would be fine. Yeah. Also, keep in mind that maybe things change if certain contributors leave the pool of participants or something, then you have to replace that somehow. Build cash reserves. Adequate cash reserves allow bills to be paid on time. Cash reserves help avoid late fees and provide relief in a downturn of donations or other revenue. Reserves can also be used for replacing worn-out carpets, roofs, heating and air systems, and more. A financially sound ministry has cash reserves equal to 3 to 6 months of expenses plus current liabilities. A ministry's annual low cash point will determine the adequacy of the cash reserves. Well, these are various comments and concepts that have to be figured out by the board and administration in figuring out what is an adequate cash reserve. I know when I was treasurer for our local school that we had, say, $50,000 in savings. Ah, you better believe it. Thank you. We had $50,000 in savings, and to the average school board member joining the board, that seemed like a lot compared to his personal checkbook. But then when you stop to think about the monthly, you know, that was maybe 2 months of regular operating expenses, and especially including payroll. So then it doesn't sound so much so bad, and it really is better, I think, to have 3 to 6 months of reserves there in case of a sudden downturn. So now we've got fulfill donors' intentions. This is habit number 5. Some funds are designated by donors for a specific project, capital fund, or need. So here we just want to make sure that we honor the donor's restriction or objective. I think most any nonprofit would prefer to have where needed most those designations because it gives full latitude to use it where the need is, the current need is. But it is true that there are certain types of designations like a building fund or a scholarship fund or maybe other foreign mission needs that some people are just willing to give for that particular thing. And so nonprofits are willing to accept those restrictions. Just remember, though, that if it's a restriction outside of your mission, you should just say thank you, but that we're not the right organization for that. So, yes, nonprofits are willing to accept designated gifts for such givers. And then let's move to the sixth one, exercise proper transparency. I think this one is also important and significant because transparency means openness and honesty. And that includes ready availability of relevant, reliable information about the performance, financial position, and governance of an organization. A person who is transparent has no secrets and tells no lies. Although, it would be inappropriate for me to say that Ben gave $100,000 to the organization last year. Those kinds of details are taking transparency too far. But on the other hand, suspicions of any mishandling of donations and so on leads to trouble for the nonprofit, and charges of mishandling or suspicions of mishandling of ministry funds will most certainly affect constituent support. So if donors aren't confident that gifts are being stewarded properly, they will reduce or suspend their giving. So ministries must find that optimal point between full transparency and no transparency, and we'll call that the point of proper transparency. That should be closer to transparency than no transparency, shouldn't it? And let's seek divine wisdom in determining it. Engaging an independent auditor, I think this is good because it's third party. It helps to reassure both the nonprofit and the constituent base that there's stability here, and so I won't enlarge very much on that. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 8:20 and 21 that we want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift, and he says we should take pains to get this right. We are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of man. So that's why we're concerned, like Paul, that we are good stewards. A board of directors is also sometimes called a board of trustees. We are stewards of that which God's people have given to us to manage and oversee. So That's a high calling. It was Gail Gifford in her book, How Are We Doing, that said, I think there are three yardsticks that we should measure the effectiveness of a board against. And one, how will you make the community better? And how good a steward are you? That's the subject today. And how well do you work as a team? Those are other subjects. I'm asking ourselves to think seriously about our stewardship. And if you want to do some supplemental reading on fundraising, I think you will enjoy Andy Robinson's book, How to Raise $500 to $5,000 from Almost Anybody. And there's another online link if you'd like to give some thought there. I promised you a little bit of time, but I've got maybe only 20 seconds. I'm not sure. Question.
I recently heard that board members, although volunteers, as you said, that board members could be held financially responsible for mishandling of funds, even though it may have been a board decision on how to disperse some funds or something, that board members could be held legally responsible.
I think that's true. That's the nature of the responsibility. And it's time to quit. So I'll just say, now let's just realize that again, if we have kept the relationship with our constituent base strong enough, then hopefully they will help stand with us if there's some sort of a problem that overtook us. Otherwise, I mean, it's predicated on the idea that we do as faithful a job as we can. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from REACH 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from REACH or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.